Hi, I'm Satyajit.
Hi, I'm Rachita.
Welcome to Paperback by the Open Library Project.
We have as our guest today, Gayatri Rangachari Shah. Gayatri is the author of Changemakers, 20 Women Transforming Bollywood Behind the Scenes, which we'll discuss in the first half of the podcast.
In the second half, we discuss Educated by Tara Westover, Mr. and Mrs. Jinnah by Sheila Reddy, The Anarchy by William Dalrymple, A Stranger Truth, Lessons in Love, Leadership and Courage by Ashok Alexander. Happy listening.
When I joined the Hindi film industry in the early 1990s, very few women worked behind the scenes. I started out as a fourth assistant director and was the only girl on set, apart from the stars. The few other women one saw were the hairdressers. Even the costume designers and makeup artists were men. People did not really want their daughters to work in the industry because it was largely male-dominated. We took a photo of the unit on the last day we filmed Jo Jeeta Wohi Sikandar, for which I had done the choreography. That was in 1992. That picture is an accurate portrayal of the times. In a crew of 75 to 80 men, there is just one woman, me. From the earliest days of Hindi cinema, when women were not allowed to act in movies, men wore wigs and dressed up as women to play female characters, to the present day, we've come a long way. Corporates have entered the business and there are many more educated people working in films now. That's brought in a new professionalism. The film industry is considered respectable today, and because it is also lucrative, it is attracting talented men and women from across the country and around the world. Things started changing in the early 2000s. I think Main Hoon Na broke some kind of glass ceiling. I don't think that was acknowledged enough, though. It was unheard of for a woman to direct an action-packed, big-budget commercial Bollywood movie that went on to make crores of rupees. Till then, women were put into a niche. We were supposed to make sensitive movies about sensitive issues. That small movie about a couple that can't have children that run as a morning show at a multiplex. With Main Hoon Na, I became one of the few women to direct a mainstream entertainer. Today, there are several women directors. Perhaps not all are famous, but they are there. Now, units are full of women. In 25 years, the scene has changed dramatically. On my films Happy New Year and Om Shanti Om, 50% of my crew comprised women. I want to be clear that I do not choose a person because she is a woman, nor am I suggesting that anyone should get a job because of their gender. I choose the best person for the job. That they happen to be a woman is a great thing. I would like men to read this book and realize that the women who work with them and for them go through a lot and that they work much harder to get half the appreciation as men. Men take that for granted. I see male directors and I'm amazed at their sense of entitlement and arrogance. Women tend to downplay their achievements. People would be surprised to know that even I have low self-esteem. I never talk about how many hits I have delivered and that nobody can push me around. Women don't speak like that. I'm delighted that Gayatri and Mallika have chosen to shine a light on the women who toil behind the scenes in this industry day in and day out. After reading their stories, I know you will applaud them. Gayatri and Mallika have profiled a solid list of women, many of whom I know and respect. Each one of them is an outstanding example of how hard work and living on your own terms pays off. I hope this book will inspire young women around the country to choose to work in films and make this industry even more dynamic. What could be better?
Thank you, Gayatri Rangachari Shah. That was an extract from her book, Changemakers, 20 Women Transforming Bollywood Behind the Scenes. We'll be right back after this to discuss the book in more detail. Welcome to Paperback by the Open Library Project. I am your co-host Satyajit, otherwise known as Onion Knight in most food circles. I'm hosting this podcast with my co-founder at the Open Library Project, Rachita Sharma.
Hi guys, my name is Rachita. I'm an ex-banker, social impact entrepreneur, podcaster, writer, publisher, and inveterate learner. The Open Library Project is a curated library service which is offered to corporates on a subscription basis. The idea here is to create value, build a knowledge community, and encourage a growth mindset amongst our members.
Today we have with us on the show Gayatri Rangachari Shah. Gayatri is a journalist and a columnist whose work has appeared in both national and international publications like the New York Times. She has a column in The Hindu, is a contributing editor at Vogue and Architectural Digest, and India Head at Tina Brown Live Media, which produces the globally renowned Women in the World Summit. She edits the India Art Fair magazine and is a trustee of Mumbai Art Room in Colaba. She covers numerous subjects including culture, gender, design and education and has profiled and interviewed leading personalities around the world. Hey Gayatri, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And wow,
that is an amazing introduction.
Yeah, I'm in awe.
Well, listen, your introduction was pretty amazing. thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great that you're here. And, you know, it's great that we're talking about your book because it talks about a really, really important aspect that we're dealing with today. And that is about, you know, women and their participation in society. So, tell us about, you know, what your background has been like. Of course, Satyajit mentioned, but, you know, how you got to writing this book and why it really makes an impact in your life.
So, yes, absolutely, Rachita, you hit the nail on the head when you said women and, you know, their role in society because, I co-wrote this book with a really close girlfriend of mine, Malika Kapoor, who's based out of Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And what we were finding as two working journalists in Mumbai was that as India's economy was growing, which it was till, you know, last year, I suppose, as we were becoming a more affluent society, our women were dropping out of the workforce.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So India has one of the lowest workforce participation rates in the world.
Right.
When it comes to women, we come in, I think, right above Saudi Arabia. And these statistics were really distressing to us because even though women have made great strides in fields as varied as, you know, banking or, you know, the lunar project with the Mars mission and all of that, you know, at the same time, we don't have the kinds of numbers that we need to see in order for this country to really develop economically.
Absolutely.
So we were sort of grappling with that issue just, you know, privately. Mm. And then the, you know, awful, abhorrent 2012 rape case happened in Delhi.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sort of seemed like there was just this national conversation that bubbled to basically came to the surface about women and, you know, our representation, what, you know, our safety, all sorts of issues. And, you know, papers started covering gender in a much more significant way. And the genesis for this book really was that, A, of course, in our journalistic careers, we've had to interview a lot of big movie stars and we would go on set and we were seeing a lot more women on set than ever before. And, you know, I think all of us who grew up at a particular time in India had thought that the movies were a particular way. And, you know, as Farah says herself in her foreword, you know, it was not necessarily a respectable profession. So women, you know, girls weren't encouraged to go into the business.
Yeah.
So we were seeing that changing. Mm. At the same time, all of this was happening within the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we came across the story of Charu Khurana, who is the opening chapter of this book, who was just a young woman who wanted to work as a makeup artist in the movies and found that she could not, because women were prevented from working as makeup artists. And so that really became the genesis for this book, because we said if there's one person who's trying to take on the system, there must be many more. Mm. And that was the sort of the way that we sort of approached this, decided to get this project off the ground.
Okay. So while, you know, you were writing this book and you interviewed these people, did you realize or did you come to this conclusion that it is tough for women to, you know, sort of go to the top because they have to fight a majority of, you know, male counterparts for every position that they try for?
So I think regardless of whatever industry you're in, you're going to find that happen.
Right.
I think that the decks are stacked against women for multiple reasons. A, there's just not enough of us in sort of a workplace.
Mm.
Second of all, we also carry the burden of the home.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, so there are many more demands on our time. A guy could maybe, I'm generalizing here, but I, you know, if let's take elder care out of it, maybe could stay at work for 18 hours.
Right.
It's not always possible for a woman to do that if she's got a family at home and
Absolutely.
Children and all of that. So that immediately sets the, you know, is sort of puts women in a different sort of situation.
Yeah.
So I think that the film industry is no different really from a corporate environment or the medical profession or anything else in that respect.
Fantastic. So like Farah mentioned in her in the forward as well, in the introduction to the book. A lot of things have changed over the past few years. So, you know, what do you think has been the sort of change? Is it because there's more conversation around what needs to happen in the future? Are men becoming more sensitized towards what problems women are facing because there's this conversation happening? What do you think about?
So I think the conversation has started happening very recently.
Yeah.
I think the first thing to think about is that Bollywood, which is not a term I really like to use, but it's easy to use. Mm-hmm. But the Hindi film industry has become much more professional for, a couple of very significant reasons. The first of which is that it was only in the late 1990s that the government of India recognized it as an industry.
Right.
So it was only in 1998 that they got that recognition, which came with a host of benefits, which, much of which included financing.
Mm-hmm.
So you could now then approach a bank or a legitimate institution to get funding.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What was happening earlier was that there was no way to really access funds, which is why the underworld was quite involved. And, I think we've all grown up with those stories.
Yeah. Right.
And all of that. And, Anupama Chopra, who's also profiled in this book, who is India's leading film critic, she broke that big story. I think it was a cover story for India Today, in the 90s, about how there was all this financing coming from very unseemly sources.
Right.
And so when that went away, and once the industry got recognized and they had access to, legitimate sources of funding, immediately the profession began to change.
Right.
And because of that, you started to see a new group of individuals coming into the business.
Yeah.
Slowly, I'm not saying that it's not dominated still by a number of families, but it has changed significantly a lot for this reason. So, people went to college and then they decided to join the business, and things like that. So it started to attract, let's say, many more, I would say, middle class people, men and women.
Right.
And I think that then helped to change the ethos within the industry.
Okay.
I mean, Me Too and all of that has come much more recently.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think the growing presence of women started because, that unseemly angle of the movie business sort of started to dissipate.
Okay. Awesome. So I just wanted to get into your process a little bit about writing the book. Like, how intensive was your research? Like, how many interviews? How much time did you spend with these people? And it just seems like a Everestian task, Like,
there were times in the middle of it when we were like, oh my God, will there ever be light at the end of this tunnel?
Right.
So we did more than 120 interviews.
Wow.
We have, I think, more than, hundreds of hours of interview tapes. It was from start to finish at least 18 to 20 months as a project.
Okay. Yeah.
So we did, we're both journalists, so we can't ever write a story without having a minimum of at least two sources.
Right.
Then you're writing a whole chapter on someone and sort of doing a deep dive into their life. You have to speak to everyone from people they've known in their childhood to their family members to people they've worked with to, of course, the movie stars who've worked with them and all of that. So, it just became this gargantuan task, but we have something to show for it, so it's
a great prize for the effort, right?
Absolutely. And who would you recommend this book to? Like, what would the ideal audience for this book be?
Well, as an author, I'd like to say everyone should read this book, but I think anyone who is interested in the creative industries in this country and how it works, anyone who's interested in gender, anyone who's interested in really popular culture, Indian popular culture, I think anyone who's interested in modern India over the last two decades, all those individuals should perhaps pick up this book.
Yeah, it's a great culmination of Bollywood and gender and, corporate life, and it's a mix of all of that. So
even people who, because we have a lot of people who came into the business from advertising.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of info on the advertising industry. We spoke to a lot of people in that space. And so, if you're interested in fashion, Anita Shroff Adajania is in the book, and she is really a pioneer. And we all, some of us may remember what Indian fashion was like in the mid-90s and what it's like today. There's really no comparison. So anybody interested in fashion history should read this book. Music, because we have a couple of music people in the book too. Things like that. So,
so I mean, like a holistic approach to
I think probably there's something for everyone in here.
Fantastic. And where's the book available?
It's available on Amazon and Flipkart, and I should be available at your local bookstore, depending on, you know, how big the bookstore is.
Right.
But online for sure.
Awesome.
Awesome.
On that note, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back after this. Welcome back, guys. We still have with us Gayatri Rangachari Shah, and that was an awesome first half. Gave us great insight into Bollywood.
A lot of
and,
things, actually.
Yeah, actually, a lot of things, yeah. So in the second half, we're moving on to the book that we're talking about next is Educated by Tara Westover. So Gayatri, tell us a little bit about this book. How did you come by it?
So, my co-author Malika suggested mm-hmm. this book to me. She's very active in a book club in Hong Kong, and I'm always asking her for recommendations.
Right.
So she suggested it to me, and then I learned that it was on Bill Gates's, sort of list of books that you must read.
Right.
And I said, okay, I've got two like really credible, sort of recommendations, so I'm going to pick this book up. And it's a phenomenal book. And the reason it's phenomenal is because it's a memoir by Tara Westover, but you can't believe that it actually happened. Like her story, her life story is so unbelievable. So in a nutshell, she grew up in a Mormon household in Idaho, mm-hmm. in rural Idaho with a mountain as a backdrop. But her parents, especially her father, was a survivalist. So okay. they thought the U.S. government was completely evil mm-hmm. and was out to get them. Mm-hmm. So they were totally off the grid. They okay. had no electricity. They had no telephone. And the children did not have birth certificates. They didn't know the days that they were born. They were all born at home. It's crazy. It's like, wow. I mean, in a way that they are like a very rural Indian family, but right. even maybe the most distressed rural Indian family, because even rural Indian families don't have all of, have access to all of these things.
Right.
Yeah.
So her father basically chose to not have any kind of footprint in the United States of America mm. in any system. And so they grew up, the children, she and her siblings grew up without going to school. They just didn't study. And they kind of just like, the father had a scrapyard and they would sort of work in the scrapyard. It's remarkable. And then this girl, Tara, one of her brothers introduced her to music and she fell in love with music and she realized she had a voice. So she would then go into the town to sing. That became her ticket out.
Right. Mm.
So she realized that in order to go to college, she had to know things like algebra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she taught herself algebra.
Wow.
She taught herself trigonometry. I mean, I'm telling you, this book wow. is a must read because you can't believe that this actually happened.
Wow. Yeah.
And I can't remember when she was born, but she's, this would have happened over the last like 35 years or something. That's my bad that I don't remember when she was born. But anyway, she's not very old. And so she got to Brigham Young University and where she discovered history.
Okay. Mm.
And then that eventually took her to Cambridge in the United wow. Kingdom and where she discovered languages. And then she ended up writing a book. And the beauty of the books is that it's many stories rolled into one. Part of it is suspense of what happens to the author because I don't want to give too much away, but there's a lot of tension at home.
Okay.
And, the very fact that the way she grew up, you can't believe people in the U.S. grew up like this. Maybe right. in like some village in remote village in India or maybe some remote village in a part of the world which is yeah. very underdeveloped, but certainly not the United States.
Right.
So, yes,
just
so I mean,
her resilience,
and her, exactly her resilience, her ability to overcome odds. And I cannot emphasize enough what a beautiful writer she is. Mm-hmm. So,
fantastic. Wow, it sounds like a must read.
Yeah, definitely want to pick that up.
I just think like being undocumented is so difficult,
yeah.
and then to overcome that and then get into like a mainstream university, and it sounds unbelievable.
It is, you said.
Yeah. So,
I mean, she's essentially she was self-taught,
right?
Yeah.
And
right.
that in and of itself is just. I was thinking, I'm the mother of two children, and I was just thinking to myself, my God, these children need to know that,
yeah.
What a gift they have with education, going into a classroom, because this girl, just her sheer grit and tenacity to be able to teach herself
yeah.
these subjects in
yeah.
order to get into college,
yeah.
So
it's incredible.
Phenomenal. So tell us, it's obviously impacted you and like you love the writing and everything. But any other reason why this book is particularly important for you?
So, I think that I think this book is important because sometimes we forget that real life can be even more surreal than fiction.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I think it puts into perspective, you know, whenever one thinks that one's life is so hard, uh-huh. you think about something like this, you know, growing up like this, having to struggle so hard to get to where you have to get to. There was a point in college when she didn't have enough money and she had this awful, awful dental issue and she had to get a root canal and then she was going to drop out because she couldn't pay for it. And, the pastor at the university, Brigham Young is a university, you know, run by Mormons, you know, told her to apply for government help or, you know, assistance or whatever. And she, because of the way she was brought up, she refused to do that.
Yeah.
And then the pastor was so, you know, he didn't want to see this young woman drop out of college because of not being able to fund a root canal and pay, you know, whatever. So he actually opened up his own checkbook and he wrote a check for $1,400 so she could get this root canal. So I think what it also just affirmed to me is that, you know, you find kindness in the most unexpected sources.
Yeah.
And even a stranger can be someone who opens up like doors for you. So I think it reaffirms one's faith in humanity.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And again, to come back to the issue of grit and determination. I mean, the kind of the ability of an individual to really overcome all sorts of obstacles. I think that's what really, this book really stayed with me for that reason.
Fantastic. Yeah, and just linking it back to your book, it just shows that, you know, gender doesn't matter and she really did work to reach where she is today. So
absolutely. Yeah. And actually, Tara spent some time talking about the role that was, you know, because she was a girl, what was expected of her, especially in her community.
Yeah.
So yes, that it also, gender was an underlying theme. I don't think she didn't write about it. Oh, she didn't really, you know, wasn't overt, but it was very much an undercurrent through the book.
Awesome.
So fantastic. So the next book we're moving on to is Mr. and Mrs. Jinnah by Sheila Reddy.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about this book.
So this is a book that, so let me back up.
Mm-hmm.
I spent 5 years of my life in Pakistan, in Islamabad.
Oh.
My father was a diplomat, and so he represented the government of India there. So I went to high school in Pakistan, and I, you know, feel, I am obviously very familiar with the country and, you know, have sort of, I've seen it at close quarters.
Right.
And I've always been fascinated by, of course, the history of, you know, our own Indian history and, you know, the genesis for partition and all of that. So that period of time in Indian history has always been a great source of fascination. And so when this book came out, I seized upon it and I read it. I think I must have read it. It's quite a big book and I think I must have read it like in maybe 2 days.
Okay.
And then I don't know how, but I ended up reaching out to the author, Sheila Reddy, and I can't remember where I met her. And saying, when is the Bombay book launch? And she said, there isn't one. And I said, what? But Jinnah is from Bombay and Rathi, his wife was from Bombay. And this whole story is about Bombay. It has to be here. So I set it upon myself to have this book launch for her.
Oh, wow.
So, and when I set my mind to something, you know, then I go into overdrive. So
right.
I called up the Taj in Colaba and I said, you guys have to do this book launch. And they're like, we don't really do book launches. And I said, no, you have to do this one.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, oh, but it's Jinnah and, you know, we don't know. And there'll be tension and all that. I said, you guys figure that out. We can keep it on the down low. The press doesn't have to know, but we have to do this book launch.
Right.
And we ended up doing the most amazing swish fancy book launch.
Wow.
Super.
Wow.
At one of the, you know, very sort of beautiful spaces in the Taj. And the hotel actually pulled up these amazing old photographs from when Rathi, Jinnah, who I'll get to in a minute, would stay there and come and visit and all of that. So all of that was the backdrop. And, you know, we served champagne and it was this. And then I got Ira Dubey, the actor, and Rahul Khanna, the actor, to actually read as Rathi and Muhammad Ali Jinnah.
Oh, wow.
And so Ira showed up like dressed like Rathi.
Amazing.
And it was just such a wonderful, wonderful evening. I mean, honestly, that's what all book launches should be like.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it really made the book come alive. And so that was, that's to basically show you how passionate I am about this book.
Amazing.
Yeah, that is proof enough.
So just to tell you about this book, the book is really about the marriage of Muhammad Ali Jinnah with Rathi Petit, who was a Parsi.
Okay.
And, you know, we know a lot about Mahatma Gandhi because and his private life because he was so open and he shared everything and everything is in his letters and his books and all that. But Jinnah, the man, you know, the private life is not something we know much about at all.
Yeah.
We know about him as a historical figure and all the rest of it, but we don't know much about him as a person. And this book basically gives us a deep dive into the complex character of a man who has polarized South Asia for decades. And, you know, he was 42 years old when he married this 18-year-old beautiful Parsi girl who happened to be the daughter of his friend Sir Dinshaw Pettit in 1918. And it was the scandal of the early 20th century. So you've got, you know, you've got beauty and you've got scandal and you've got society and you've got politics. So all of it mixed in together. And, you know, and they eloped. And there's this, you know, there's a scene in the book where, you know, her father opens the newspaper and almost slumps on the breakfast table because he reads that his daughter has run off with Muhammad Ali Jinnah. So you can imagine the kind of the drama that unfolded. So the book is really about their marriage and what happened and the intricacies. And also it's sad because the marriage was not a success and what it was like to be Rati and, you know, the kind of her increasing isolation. Mm-hmm. And they had one child, Dina, who went on to marry Neville Wadia, who's, you know, and their son is Nisli Wadia, who Bombay Dyeing and, you know, Goair and all of that. So so there's this very kind of interesting sort of social element to the whole story. But there's also, you know, it's the way Sheila writes the book, it's set against the backdrop of the political goings on at that time.
Right. Yeah.
And she throws up some very interesting questions about what direction Jinnah might have taken had Rati lived, because she died very young at the age of 29.
Wow, this is like a great insight into, you know, history that a part of history we don't know about. So
I love reading biographies which are like, or memoirs which are from like earlier times, because it just sheds light on how different things are and, you know, how far or not far we've probably come since then.
Yeah, and you know, she talks about Rati was a great friend to Sarojini Naidu and her daughter. So whenever Sarojini and her daughters would come to Bombay, they would, or you know, she would go to the Taj and spend all this time with them and all that. And you know, what had happened was she was ostracized from her Parsi community.
Oh. Yeah.
So she didn't really have any friends and she didn't really have anyone to hang out. And she was young, right?
Yeah.
Remember, she was 18 when she got married, 29 when she died. So, you know, at that, what do you do when you're at that stage in your life? And so, you know, she turned to Sarojini for, I think, a lot of companionship and comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Sarojini was very busy with the freedom movement.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all of this is told in a very rich, evocative detail. Sheila traveled to Pakistan and sourced material from the archives there. It's all really fascinating.
Wow. Sounds like a fantastic read.
Yeah. So I think Gayatri's theme is that nonfiction can be as surreal as your fiction stories, basically.
So the next book we're moving on to is The Anarchy by William Dalrymple. What a fantastic book this is.
Yes. So I think I'm probably being very predictable here because there's a, you know,
kind of a theme.
Yes, this book is, I mean, since it debuted, it has made tremendous waves. I think Barack Obama put it on his list of one of the best books for 2019. Uh-huh. And it's just unputdownable.
Yeah.
Are you reading it as well?
Yeah, I've read it.
You read it.
And,
so I'm still plowing through it because it's a big book. But William is a remarkable historian and a remarkable writer.
Yeah.
So, you know, the book is about something that happened 250 years ago, but it's still so fast-paced. And, you know, every page you're like learning something different and he's sourced material from all over the place. And you kind of are just amazed at how just a bunch of ex-pirates, you know, ex-Caribbean pirates basically kind of constructed this company and then took over a whole nation,
a whole
region.
Country.
And, you know, defeated like the very mighty Mughal Empire, which of course was the richest empire in the world at the time.
Right.
We've never been taught this version of history, you know, where it's so kind of, because we just know the East India Company as invaders who came in and then set up everything. But then how it started, how everything was formed, it's so fascinating because it's unbelievable actually. Like how this has whole the whole company was formed and how things transpired.
Yeah, I think that, and that's the genius of William is that he was able to kind of recreate that in kind of a level of detail that one just would not be able to expect. And I know the book took him a long time to research and write because there's just so much material in here. I want to actually quote William because he says,
However powerful Facebook or Google are today, they'd have to have a nuclear strike force to be as powerful as the East India Company was in the early 19th century. So that's just to give you the kind of, you know, give you a perspective on
it's
how...
actually brilliant.
Yeah, because what a behemoth this company was, you know, and what they did. We can't even imagine that today. Even Amazon is not as big as it or any of the big major companies in the world today.
Absolutely.
It was a complete monopoly and they did it. You know, they basically took over India in this very strategic, very brutal manner.
Right.
And destroyed the economy of this nation. So, I mean, I think really it's a must read for anyone who is interested in history.
Awesome. Great. Awesome. And the final book we are discussing is a book by Ashok Alexander. A Stranger Truth. Lessons in Love, Leadership and Courage from India's Sex Workers.
Yeah.
So Ashok Alexander is an author we've discussed before on the show as well. So
And
not this book though, we discussed his other book.
And I had the opportunity to see you moderate a panel discussion with Ashok Alexander at the Tata Lit Fest, which was, I think, one of the best conversations I've ever heard.
Thank you. It
was just beautiful because, you know, like you said, when you read certain books, you are amazed that, you know, how blindsided you are about so many things and you're not even aware of what is happening, you know, all around the world and in your own country. So I think this book did that for me in terms of just, you know, the sex workers' lives and the kind of hardships that they have to go through, the 2002 AIDS epidemic and, you know, all of those things that are just like shocking. Like, you know, when he mentioned that sex workers work in the villages, in the farms at 50 rupees a day. Yes. They are selling their body for 50 rupees. And, you know, that they are not the ones who don't want to use, like, you know,
protection.
And it's actually that they are beaten and they're abused if they ask that, you know, you need to use protection. So it's really shocking to know all these things. And I mean, the conversation was beautiful, so I'm sure you have a lot to say about it.
Well, you know, this book was an eye-opener for me. I have to be honest, I picked up this book because I was doing a panel discussion with Ashok, and I'm not someone who can, if I know someone, if I'm moderating a panel and someone has written a book, I have to then read it because I can't like show up without, you know, having sort of done some research.
Right. Yeah.
And so I picked it up for that reason, but it was... it was just an insight into a world about which we know nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, we don't give it much time of thought. I mean, we're not thinking about the sex workers of this country. But you know what? Just to give some background, is that Ashok, you know, headed the Gates Foundation initiative in India to prevent, you know, the HIV epidemic. What had happened was that HIV had become quite prevalent in certain states. There were key states that had become very vulnerable, and they were very afraid that, you know, this virus would then enter the general population.
Right.
Right.
And if it entered the general population, then it would have been game over, because in India, I mean, there's no way you can stymie something like that. So, you know, the Gates Foundation and Ashok and his team really deserve a lot of credit for containing that and restricting the virus. And actually now, you know, I don't know what the stats are, but I know that India has it under control.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is so important.
Yeah.
You know, he was an ex-McKinsey executive. So he himself didn't realize, you know, what he was signing up for when he joined this particular project. And he, his own eyes were opened.
Mm-hmm.
And he learned so much from these women and these men and the trans community about, you know, humanity, about how knowledgeable they are. They, as you said, Rachita, they knew what that they needed to be protected, but they couldn't afford it because if they insisted on it, they'd lose their customers, and then and that's their only source of livelihood.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, some of the stories in the book are really heartbreaking, but Ashok writes it in a manner that you don't, I mean, you feel sad, but you also feel very uplifted.
Right.
I don't know if those two emotions are, you know, if I'm explaining that correctly, but honestly, it's, the book is really an amazing insight into a populace that we really need to understand and take care of more.
Yeah, and I think what you mentioned is absolutely true. Just like Melinda Gates' book herself, The Moment of Lift, it gives you the similar feeling. Like, you know, you're sad about things that you get to know, but you also feel very uplifted, and you, you know, this strive to do better for people is what...
There's a sense of hope at the end of, you know, yes. Like the stories are really sad, but then there's a sense of, even with Melinda Gates' book, The Moment of Lift, it's a very hard-hitting book because it's 70% about India and the realities of the India that we live in, which no one is actually aware of, which I think even Mr. Alexander's book, it does the same thing.
Or we're aware, or we choose to look to the other unaware. Way. Yeah. Or we, we choose to be unaware, or it's not our problem.
Right.
And actually... You know, what this shows is that it's everyone's problem.
Right.
You know, whether it's the drug epidemic, you know, that's another thing that we don't talk about, but it's a big issue in this country, similar to that. And that's another way in which the virus or actually any public health epidemic can break out.
Right.
Right. So I think books like these really kind of take you away from your own world. And I think that's kind of the job of a book, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, right? It's to take you to a different place. And so hopefully this, you know, the small selection that that I discussed here would do that for readers.
It was a great lesson in humanity and history and
fantastic
women, and
all books should be our listeners should pick up.
Definite reads.
And thank you so much, Gayatri, for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
It was awesome having you. Where can people reach out to you on social media if they want to?
So, you know, I really never check my Facebook account, but I'm on Twitter at Gayatri Shah, and I'm also on Instagram at GR Shah.
Okay. Perfect.
And I have a LinkedIn account, but I never check that either.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
And a big thank you to all our listeners. You can follow the Open Library Project on LinkedIn, Instagram and Facebook for latest updates on our events. And stay tuned for the next paperback podcast on IVM Podcasts. Happy reading. You can follow IVM Podcasts on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter at IVM Podcasts. Listen to paperback on the IVM Podcast app, website or wherever you listen to podcasts.